I'm Roy Red, six-time best-selling author and business acquisitions expert. Every Thursday evening on Eagle FM, we talk business the way it actually works. Not theory, not motivation, not noise. We break down ownership, leverage, cash flow, and the decisions that separate operators from spectators. This is Business with Roy, where strategy meets execution. You're listening to Eagle FM 104. Let's begin.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on Business with Roy, Eagle FM's brand new radio show that we're going to be doing in collaboration with our good friend Roy Red, all the way from the United States of America. Roy is a six-time best-selling author, I would say business extraordinaire. And today he's gonna take us on a journey of how he got to where he is today. Roy, how are you doing today?
What's up, guys? Heedy, what's up, brother?
I'm super excited to be with you guys and collab and just, you know, pour into you guys, hopefully make you guys some money, help you guys grow and just be better and succeed at whatever you're doing.
100%. I mean, I know we haven't, we haven't covered this part yet. I know my name says Heedy, but it's actually pronounced Hende.
Hende. Hey.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Stay out here. Don't be had me out here calling you the wrong thing, Hende. Come on, man.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's a good way to break the ice for the listeners.
Yeah.
So, Roy, if you can take us, let's start from the beginning. You know, like I said, you're a six-time best-selling author, but let's start from the beginning. Where did you go to school? What did you study? And what led you to where you are today?
Well, I'm actually a paramedic by trade. And so
okay.
I went into the medical field at first because I wanted to be a fireman. So I went to school for fire technology. This is actually something. So I didn't go to school and I didn't get a degree for a long time. So this is the first time I'm actually going to be saying this. My entire audience is going to be learning that I actually got a degree from psychology from the University of Arizona. A lot of people don't know that, but, I started out as a medic. I started my first business when I was 25, which was a CPR business, which I still have today. It's called Red Zone CPR, where I teach people, and certify people to do CPR. So when someone's, have in a critical condition, you know how you do CPR, you pump on their chest. That was my first business when I was 25. And, from there, that actually business made me a good amount of money. And that's when I got introduced to the idea that profits are better than wages. Profits are better just because you can scale profits, right? If you're making a wage, you can go to your boss and say, hey, can you pay me $1 more, $2 more, $10 more? And they may or may not, but there's only so much time you can work. But profits, you can scale because you can start to have other people work for you, and do different things. But started as a medic, started my CPR business, and then decided to write a book in 2016, which was my first book, which is called The Success Magnet. And
okay, that's the year I graduated high school.
Really? Oh, that's crazy. I'm an old fiver, so even though I look young, black don't crack. I'm older than. Older,
yeah.
And that brings up a good point is a lot of young men think they're supposed to be like rich, young. And it's like, this takes a long time. Business is a lifelong game. But wrote that book and a NBA skills trainer got a hold of it. And that led me to working with NBA athletes and athletes. And then that led me to speaking on stages. And I kept writing books, and to this day, I still speak all over the world. I probably do 10 keynotes a year. Back then, I was doing 40 keynotes a year. I'm actually going to be giving a talk in Washington to about 500 business owners.
Okay.
And that is kind of how we are here today.
So you said you at first you were interested in psychology, right? You said?
Mm-hmm. I am very good at psychology. I think anyone who goes into business or wants to be successful at anything needs to learn psychology because you're working with other people, right? How do you get all people to say yes? How do you get other people to want to collab with you? How do you get other people to listen to you? It's leadership. And so I've read everything on psychology and,
and psychology is the word we use, but it's actually ontology and ontological methods. And I learned to motivate people. I learned to motivate myself. I learned to change people's identities really, really fast. And I can get on the phone and sell people really fast too.
Yeah. So, let's dive a little bit into that. Tell us about how your background in psychology has helped you in the world of business. I feel like if you grasp the concept of psychology really well, you kind of have a one up in whatever room you enter. So, give the listener some insight into how that knowledge of psychology has helped you in the world of business.
Tremendous. Every day I make calls and I do cold email. I actually met you through cold email.
And yeah, exactly.
If you know psychology, you can walk to any girl and get to know her. You can walk that to anybody and get to know them. You can cold email, cold call people and get to know them, right? Because at the end of the day, if you can take up space in someone's head, they will feel a way about you. And emotions create bonding. You know, you got oxytocin bonding. That's the one that most people know. There's another one called vasopressin bonding. And so what I learned was how to do pattern interrupts, which is a pattern interrupt is where you do something or say something to shut someone's autopilot off. Cause most people are in autopilot when you meet them. They're just like, like an NPC, right? Like a bot. So when you do a pattern interrupt, then you're able to open up their mind to suggestion and, you know, just be a regular person. Is there steps to a pattern interrupt? Hey, how are you? What do you do? Family is a big one. You know, want to learn about their family, and I'm not doing it just to do a deal. I actually want to be interested in that person. You can't fake this, right? And it's just being a human, like, you know, what are you into? You know, what do you do on the weekends? And trying to find something that we both understand and that we're both into. And then from there, that can make that connection. And then we can talk about that and then talk about business or whatever it is later, whatever outcome I want out of it later. But strategy is everything. I can walk and talk to anyone and lead them down a story to where I want to get.
100%. I mean, in my little experience now in business, often I find that there's a, like when you enter a room, you meet someone for the first time, you know, you come from different backgrounds. It might be from a different race, different culture, whatever. And sometimes that difference really is, no matter how good the plan I come in with, is that if I don't break that initial tension, so to say, things become really difficult.
Yeah, it gets weird sometimes. And for some reason, we're programmed for survival. So initially, we don't know someone, you're, for lack of better term, scared of them, right? Everyone's scared of you, Hende.
Yeah.
So if you know that, the first thing you want to do is bring down their threat, right? Mm-hmm. I'll do this with jokes. I'll do this by pointing out something they're wearing or something they're doing. You want to look them in the eye, depending on what your goal is. But it's always a little weird when you first meet people, but you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And no matter how many times you approach that girl, no matter how many times you do a cold email, no matter how many times you knock on the door, you're going to feel those feelings because it's deep in our programming as humans. But you learn to just get comfortable being uncomfortable, and you just go through the process. Hey, how are you? Oh, I like those shoes. Where'd you get those at? Or how's your family? And then you can look for what we call operational vulnerabilities and connect with someone.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back. Like we said, you're a 6-time best-selling author. I want to go back to your first book, the one you just showed us just now. What was the motivation behind writing that book? And when you finally became, not even when you became a best-selling author, like the initial feedback you got when you put out the book and then all the way to becoming a best-selling author, like walk us through that journey.
So this is actually a good question and a good lesson for people, because when you set out to create something or do something, you think people are going to support you, and people will, but you're also going to get some haters, right? Especially from your past. If they see you a certain way, they're going to always see you that way, right? Jesus actually said that a prophet has much honor except in his own home with his own friends, right? And so when I first wrote that book, I was just like, yo, people are going to think this is dope. My family's going to love it. And when I launched it, you know, some people loved it. And then some people, all they saw were like the misspelled words, like, oh, he misspelled the word here. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that ain't a best written book. That's a best sold book, right?
Exactly.
I did a lot of podcasts. I did a lot of articles, and the book picked up a lot. I'm really good at marketing books. People still hit me. They help market their books. So I marketed it well, and we did an initial couple thousand sales, and then it hit the Amazon algorithm, and then it pushed up, and then it did really good in different countries. It did well in Nigeria, did well in India. But to talk about your question, my motivation was my first mentor told me I should write a book. And I didn't really know what I should write about. But when I felt I was successful, which back then, six figures was what made me feel successful. Like now every entrepreneur is like, oh, I'm making six figures. But with my CPR business and speaking and the things I was doing, I was able to do that. And I wrote the book and launched it. And it got me on stages, and it just picked up some steam. And I was able to go through all the emotional stuff, the haters, family who didn't really support, or, you know, like the fake support, like they act like they like it, but they don't really like it. And then I had people who really loved it and came to book signings and met, you know, some great lifelong business partners from it.
Excellent. Excellent. And this was what year, sorry, when you wrote this first book?
2016, I launched it, on Amazon.
Okay. Okay. And since then, you've written five other books, correct?
Yeah, I've written five other books. I'm the type, if I get the notion or just the motivation to write in the moment, I'll do it. Later, my dad's a athletic trainer, and people always ask me, because I'm really fit, you know, what do you do? I wrote a book to help trainers sell, right? Because I was good at selling, and I knew how to launch things, and I was selling I sell the hardest thing on earth to sell, which is motivation. Nobody wants to be motivated. Mm. Nobody wants to go to there. Nobody wants to do the work. It's the hardest thing to sell. So
yeah,
when you can sell something that's easy to sell, when you can sell something that's hard to sell, when you get something that's easy to sell, it's just that much easier. And so, I did a book called The Six Figure Trainer. And that picked up a lot of steam, and I can pretty much make any book.
Short on cash? Get to a U-Save for a bargain combo of 5 for just 170.00 Namibian dollars. 2.5 kilograms Champion Super Maize Meal, 2.5 kilograms Bokomo Fat Cook Flour, 2 kilos Nice Rice, 2 kilos Marathon White or Brown Sugar, and 1 kilogram Grande Macaroni or Spaghetti. That's all for just 170.00 Namibian dollars. Hurry to your favorite U-Save. We all set at U-Save.
That picked up a lot of steam, and I can pretty much make any book a bestseller because of my audience nowadays, you know, 300,000 people across all platforms. But I just kind of write when I'm motivated to. My latest book, The Victory Equation, this is actually my favorite book because I give an exact math formula. For if you want to achieve something, if you do the formula, you'll achieve it. And
when you say exact math, you mean like actual numbers are in this equation?
Actual numbers. Math and A plus marketing equals money. Mm-hmm. All right. So for example, my mentor told me if you make 2,000 cold calls, you'll buy a business for $1 million or more. Now, I just told someone that, and we'll do business acquisitions on later episodes, and we'll talk about that. So how do I make 2,000 calls is the question, right? And these days it's easier. We have AI, we have systems, there's things we could send a lot of emails. So math plus marketing equals money. And so if you do enough volume, if you just work hard enough or figure out a way to get in front of a lot of people,
you will achieve those tools. And we talk about that in the book.
100%, 100%. Now, before we get to, you know what, some of the stuff you're doing today, tell us a little bit about how, because as I'm listening to you speak, I hear like a lot of self-motivation coming from you. You're a self-motivated person. How does a person develop that, and how does that help you in the world of business?
You know, it's a little bit DNA and a little bit how you're brung up, and then who you hang around when you get older, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not even going to lie. I have elite DNA. My dad, my whole dad's side of family, they're really, really smart. They're all high IQ. They're writers. They're professors, and that sort of stuff. But they don't have the drive to create like I do, which kind of leads to my mother's side. My mother's side is very motivative, very spiritual. My dad's side is spiritual too, but I just think I just had the perfect mixture of parents. And I've always been super competitive as a kid. You know that kid who like throws the controller at the TV when he loses a video game? Like, that was me.
Yeah.
Hit this game, I'll throw the controller. But as I got older and I learned to harness that, I have a ton of energy. When I wake up, I have to hit the gym just to bring down my energy level, because it's like so much energy. So it's a lot of DNA and how I was brought up, competitive, playing basketball. But anyone who isn't that way, you just got to get around people who are doing what you want to do. If you want to write a lawyer and you're around four lawyers, you're going to be the fifth. If anything you want to do, you know, what I was growing up, and I'm sure it's probably for this way for you too, is all the hoopers hung with the hoopers, and we thought it was cool to be, to have good grades and hoop. And we thought it wasn't cool to like be with the gangsters or the thugs. And we thought it wasn't cool to do drugs. Like, if you did any drugs, it's crazy how many people do drugs now, especially in America. But did any drugs, we like made fun of you. like, oh, he does drugs. We just kind of like made fun of you and stayed away from you. Right. And so, my mentor always says you are, the equivalent to the five people you hang around. And, a lot of people, it's hard to do, but a lot of people can just get successful in a year or two by just ditching friends and getting with people who are doing what they want to do.
100%, 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. So I want to get to, you know, your day-to-day today. What is it that, that you do today?
Well, you know how they say the early bird gets the worm and all these guys. Mm. 5 a.m. That ain't me. I'm a sleeper. So I probably wake up anywhere between 8 and 9. What's called a smart alarm. So whenever I wake up in that time, like for example, say I wake up about 8:30. First thing I do is I take my supplements, drink some water, and I go for a 10-minute walk. And on that 10-minute walk, I'm saying my affirmations. I won't share my affirmations, but I'm saying my affirmations. Then when I come back, my energy's picked up a little bit. Then I make some coffee and I get straight to the desk. When I get to the desk, the first thing I do is I look at my emails and see what leads came in from the day before or overnight. So I send about 1,000 emails a day right now because I'm buying businesses. And I just send emails saying, hey, if you want to sell your business, sell it to me. And every day I wake up to 2 to 5 emails of people saying, how does it work? We would love to sell blase, blase. I follow.
Wait, hold on. No, not to cut you off. You said you send 1,000 emails a day?
I send 1,000 emails a day.
Is that like a template you send out, or you type each email individually?
So I use what's called Spintex, which
is
a template, but it changes little things in the email so it doesn't hit in spam. What we can teach you guys this on the episode, you need to be learning AI, right? How can you lose if I'm sending 1,000 emails a day? How can I lose? There's no way. And how are you going to keep up with me if you aren't sending at least 1,000? There's guys out there sending 10,000, 100,000 emails a week. Volume. You got to figure out if I can teach anything in this segment, is figure out how can I go bigger, more volume, right?
So, I send those emails. It sends automatic. I don't physically do it. I set it up and I feed it with emails and data and then it does it. And then I respond to business owners, get them on the phone, set up a call with them. After that, I, write my Substack article. I do have a Substack is.
Oh, you have a Substack as well?
Build by Exit with Roy Red. And that Substack is just teaching business owners how to exit for the most money. And it also teaches people how to buy big, right? Mm-hmm. So we do that, the Substack. After I write the article, then I just I do what's called empty my desk, which is I check my emails and make sure there's nothing that I need to do that would have brought in money right now. Okay. When all that's done, if my, girlfriend is working, I send her off to work and then I go to the gym. Go to the gym in 20 minutes, come back, eat. I'll relax for 30 minutes to an hour, to whenever I feel ready to go. And then I get right back to the desk and then I empty my desk again. Look at my emails. Do I have any calls? Do I have to do any interviews, for Build by Exit, which is a podcast, that I have? Do I have to meet one day and do a podcast on different things? And then, from the rest of the day, all I'm doing is checking my email and getting right back to people. I want to get back to them within 15 minutes. High performers respond back fast. From there, if I need to pull a new list of leads, I'll do that and put it in so that overnight it's sending those or during the next day. Yeah. And, my lead measures or lead indicators and I talk about this in the book, is 1,000 emails a day. And I just make sure that's going. As long as that's going, I'll get a bunch of leads. And then I just got to work those leads until I close the deal.
So out of 1,000 emails a day, let's say you send 1,000 emails a day, how many emails are you looking to get the next day to say, okay, I had a successful day? Earlier you said 2 or 3, but I don't know if that was the exact number you meant to say.
Yeah. It's usually about 2 to 5, but some days it's none. It depends on the day. For example, yesterday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of emails and had a lot of calls because business owners don't have much to do, right? And a lot of business owners, they're like us. They're ADD. They have high energy. They can't sit down even though it's a holiday. And they're not like employees where they're like, oh, it's a holiday, let me relax. No, they're like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, it's a holiday. Dang. And then, oh, I got, let me check my emails. Maybe I'll catch up on emails. Then they see my email. We'll talk. So I actually had a lot yesterday. In the beginning of the year, didn't have much because people were kind of off on holiday and Christmas.
Right.
But it's starting to pick up and, I'm looking at it here now. Today, we only got one response. We got a lot of automatic responses like, thank you for contacting us. Reach out later. We'll keep reaching out, but I have a call later today with a business owner who wants to sell his business for $5 million. Talk to him later. And, you just keep working these leads. Riches are in the follow up. No matter what you do, how do you buy a business? If you're selling something, if you're reaching out to business owners, everybody has ADD. Everybody's on their phone. Everybody has dopamine, down regulation. So you have to make sure that you're constantly follow up. If you constantly follow up, you'll make money and do deals.
Right. And, the reason I asked that question actually is because so the listeners can understand that out of 1,000 emails in a day, you only need 2 or 3 to one get back to you. And out of those 2 or 3, you only need 1 to say yes and to not get discouraged at the 995 that didn't even say anything back to you.
Exactly. And that brings up the confidence part of this. You have to be, and you have to learn to do the work even when you don't feel confident. Cause there's sometimes where you're like, God, is this going to work? Everything works with enough volume. Even if you have a shitty business, as long as you do enough volume, you'll be successful. It's all about the work always.
Yeah. Now, diving into more of what you do today, the whole business acquisition thing. One, explain to the listeners what it means to be a business acquirer. Is that the term?
You could say it's all types of different things. M&A strategist. I like to call myself principal of a company that buys companies.
Okay. So yeah, explain to the listeners what that is. And you know, a lot of people I already know are asking themselves, how does a man who started a CPR business end up as someone who's, you know, casually buying businesses for $5 million? Like what, how did that happen?
Well, in 2020 during COVID, I probably lost a couple hundred grand because I couldn't do a lot of my speaking, right? And that's why I was making a lot. And then I read this book called How to Buy a Small Business. It was a Harvard book, and I took the class at Harvard. And this is a cool thing. You can take free Harvard classes online. You can take them. Like, if you ain't doing that, you're tripping.
I'm taking some AI ones right now.
Yeah. Get ahead of the game. I took their class, and then I was like, whoa, you can buy someone's business with no money. If they're a motivated seller, like, no way. That can't be true. Then I took a course at New York, Financial Institute. They have a mergers and acquisitions course. I took theirs. And I just got, obsessed by the idea, like how to learn. And then I learned about creative finance, how you can buy anything and just be creative with the finance. And in 2022, so when I started my first campaign and we bought our first business for $2 million, it was a home health business. And that's when I really, you know how when you start selling something, when you make the first sale is when you're like, oh, wow, this will really work. And so when we did the first deal, I was like, wow, this will really work. And so moving forward, I put together a board of directors. My chairman, his name is Kurt. He's a best friend of mine now. He's probably done over $1 billion in deals with Microsoft. Another friend of mine, his name is Lonnie Wall. I actually did an interview with him on Build by Exit. He's done hundreds of millions, with, what we call a roll-up strategy. And that's the strategy I'm doing now where you buy multiple businesses and then later you put them together. And so we're working together and every day we send out email. Well, I do the work. I'm CEO. I send out emails. And, when these businesses get on the phone with me, it's just basic problem solving. How much money do they want? Okay. How can I get that money without taking a loan or using my own money? But our motto is to buy their business with no money down. And there's so many ways to do that. I probably know just myself, and I'm not even the best at it, 150 ways to do it. You just want to learn and be creative. And when you buy it, then you own their business. And it's like jumping in the middle of a video game, without having to start on all the hard parts, right? You just jump in the middle where it's already cash flowing, it's already making money, and there's no risk because they're already making a ton of money.
So, okay. So when you buy a business, you buy and then you take over the operations as well?
Well, so some people do that. They'll buy and take over operations and they'll just work a business. We put a manager in place because I don't have the time to keep operating. Maybe I might.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like when people buy property and then they put a property manager in place.
It's exactly like buying property with zero down. It's the exact same thing, except it just cash flowed property.
Okay. So, give the listeners some of the methods. How do I buy a business without having any money in the bank account, essentially? How do I do that?
Talk about the one I did. Home health business. We reach out. He reaches back, says, sure, I'll sell. I talked to him. We go back and forth. I figured out he wanted around $2 million, right? The first thing you have to make sure is the money he's making has to support that $2 million because you got to pay your bills. So his did. And what I did was I figured, okay, if I can buy this for $2 million, with no money down, I could just pay him over time with the money his business is already making over 7 to 10 years. So I told, hey, how about we do a seller's note and there's different ways you could say this. This is where psychology comes in again. Like, hey, here's the seller's note. Over 7 years, I'll pay you this much. And he agreed. And when we send out a, what's called a letter of intent, which is an LOI, he signs it. Once he signs it, you do due diligence. That's where you just, you start to look at everything. You look at the finances, you look at the business, make sure there isn't anything that will fail after we switch over, right? Licenses. It's just basically like doing a walkthrough of a home to make sure it's sturdy, right? And you're seeing everything that's bad and everything that's good, right? So we do due diligence, and that took about 30 days. And then you whip up a purchase agreement with everything that we took about, and then he signs it, and then the business is mine. And then since the owner, is paying, and since I'm paying the owner out of the money, that he was already making, he agreed to be, to manage the business. So we made him the master, and he held on to it, and we gave him a percentage of our entire roll up, like 1 or 2%. Like, hey, we'll give you a percentage of the whole thing if you manage this and you are, if you become an industry expert on our board.
Mm-hmm. So when you buy these businesses, are you buying them with the intent to, okay, I assume obviously to grow their profit, but also to, with the intent to eventually sell them again to another buyer, or you, do you keep every business that you buy?
So that's where everything can be different, right? So our goal is to buy them and hold them and put them together and then sell them later when we get to the point where we can make the money we want. But let's say we have one that I feel like is, we can make more money if we buy it, boost something or change something. Usually there's a lot of small things you could change to increase the multiple. The multiple is the value, and then sell it. We'll do that as well. Or if we have someone that's not part of our, what we want in our portfolio, I'll just help them sell it and take a percentage on the sale. There's the business model is to trade my information for anywhere from 5 to 100% of their business, right? So I can help you exit 5% after we help you exit, or I can take an option to buy it in 3 years, help you boost revenue, and then buy it in 3 years at the multiple that you want it, right? So hey, look, check this strategy out. Let's say you have a business owner who they're making $500,000 a year. Those businesses could sell for, let's just say 2 times. It's usually more. Let's say 2 times. So it will sell for $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. I can go to a business owner and say, hey, I'll actually give you $1.5 million. In 3 years, let me come in and help boost the revenue. And then we'll buy, well, I'll take an option to buy it in 3 years. The option just means in 3 years, I could buy it or not buy it. It's my option, right? Yes. So the owner's like, oh, I make $500,000 more than I could have. Cool. I'll take that. I can come in if you're good. And, I'm not the best at this, but my chairman who worked at Microsoft is really good at this. We can grow the business. One of the ways you can grow the business is you can get the business a government contract. So you can have 2 to 3 years to get them a government contract. So let's say we get them a government contract for $500,000 over 5 years. Each year is $500,000. We just took the multiple from $500,000 to $1 million. Now that business is worth 5 times, and we can sell it for $5 million. So once we get the contract, I have two choices. I could take that option. I have two choices. I could refinance it and then pay them with the refinance and pocket a couple million. Or I can then take our option, buy it, sell it, take the $5 million from the sale, pay him $1.5 million, and then we take our $3.5 million. Mm. And that's just one strategy. So many ways you can, right. So many things you could do with this.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you broke that down, because yeah, that's something definitely our listeners, needed to hear, that strategy. I don't know if you're able to say, but how many, since you started doing this, how many businesses have you acquired, would you say?
Me personally?
Yeah.
One. That was the, So we bought the home health, and we wanted to do a home health roll up.
But we decided to move into a different industry. I won't say the industry. So we sold that business and now we are in a different industry and we probably have 5 businesses under LOI. But we do play the long game. My CFO, Lonnie, he's the type to be like, let him wait a little bit because if you want to sell your business, you're tired. So if we let them wait and they get a little more tired, then maybe they sell a little for cheaper. So, it's a little bit of a long game, but we probably have 5 to 7 businesses in our new industry. And the only reason why I say it is because there's no competition and I don't want any.
Yeah. I got to keep the cards close to your chest.
Yeah. Yeah. We should be able to buy. Our goal is to buy 5 of these this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, since you started doing this, what would you say is the biggest, lesson you learned whilst doing this?
That if you don't ask, you won't get.
I think
if you're not in this industry or you didn't grow up in this, you wouldn't believe someone would sell you their business for no money. There's some people, if you find a motivated enough seller, someone will give you their business. They'll let you have it. 90, I believe something like almost 90% of businesses go to probate and they just die with the owner. But if you're average 70 years old and you don't have anyone to take over your business, it helps. We help them. We're not hurting them. We help them because they don't have a way to retire, right? They can come in and say, hey, we'll take it over and we'll give you a retirement. They'll love that deal. So the best part about this is being creative and finding motivated sellers. Because baby boomers, they'll work till they die, right? Gen X, they want to get out early because they're lazier. But baby boomers, they're 70, 80. They've had this business 20, 30 years. And if they don't have anyone to give it to, you're the perfect person to take it off their hands.
Right. Has there been any particular challenges you've come across since you started doing this? Any difficulties you faced?
I would say learning all the different ways to be more creative in the finance. If you build a team, and I recommend people not to do it themselves, build a team. You want a team that has your back because when a lot of these OGs that done a bunch of deals, once they learn that you can buy businesses with no money, they'll try to take your business from you or they'll try to let you find a 2 or 3 and then they'll try to take it from you and just give you a finder's fee. I would say volume, right? If you 2,000 calls is the number to buy your business pretty much for everyone. That's the average. How can you expand your outreach? How can you make more calls? Some people might be thinking, oh, use AI robots to call, but that doesn't work with this business. Emails I found have what does work. Doing referrals, but I'm really good at cold email. Not everybody is. I would say the best thing to do is find people who are older. Go talk to them. Say, hey, have you thought about selling? Call them up.
Yeah.
You know? And if they're like, I never really thought about it. You got money, Ken? No. There's ways we can do this, right?
Yeah.
Just walk through kind of the journey. If you're working somewhere for someone and they're older, like if you're a plumber and you're working at a plumbing company and the guy's 80 years old, the owner's 80 years old, go talk to him. Say, hey, have you ever thought about selling? Hey, I would love to, take the business from you and when you're ready to retire. So that happens a lot too, is a lot of, owners will sell to their employees as well.
I have a friend who's a electrical engineer. And the company he works for is like owned by 2 or 3 partners, I think. And one of them is getting older. And then the main guy was like, yo, do you want to become like one of the partners? But he turned it down because he didn't want to do the extra work.
Yeah. I mean, if you know business, you don't have to do the extra work. You to get somebody else to do it. But you know, like your friend, if your friend wanted to be worth $20-30 million in 5-10 years, I would tell him as an electrical engineer, go buy small businesses of electrical engineers, of older guys who want to retire. And in America, it's easy no matter where you do it. But if, is he in Namibia? He could, you could crush over there. Anyone who gets a hold of our show and gets focused and takes action, you could crush over there because nobody's doing it. Yeah.
So, Roy, what I'm getting from you is kind of like Shark Tank vibes, you know? But instead of like people coming to you, you're kind of going to them.
Like Damon John, I'm losing my hair like him too.
Yeah, exactly like him. But what I wanted to get into is the reason I bring up Shark Tank is because I wanted to know what separates you from someone like a Damon Jones. Like just intuitively not thinking, I would think someone of like that stature could do what you do, like with the snap of a finger, basically. So like how are you finding success, especially in a country like America where there's thousands of millionaires and billionaires? Like how are you finding success?
The work. It really just comes down to,
yeah.
Guys who are that big, like Damon John, they're extremely hardworking and lucky. But here's the thing. You can't get lucky unless you're hardworking consistently, right? And so, M&A guys like me are more behind the scenes. Every business does M&A, right? Facebook bought Instagram. Every business does it. But my strategy with the small businesses, there's a lot of low key guys who do this. A lot of them can't talk. A lot of them aren't really outgoing and that sort. They're in the financial industry. So I do have that over them. But at the end of the day, this comes down to the work. It's like, are you actually generating leads? Cause a lot of entrepreneurs, they just do a lot of things that they don't need to be doing. They're online, they're doing this, but are you actually bringing leads and talking to people that can actually close deals and make you money? 80% of your energy should go towards that. And it takes entrepreneurs a while to learn that. It took me a while to learn that. Like, what are you doing to bring in actual revenue right now? I think that's kind of the difference. And I'm young and hopefully I can get to Damon Jones level. But I have a number in my head and I told my friend the other day, I said, I don't want to do labor work, but I'll never stop working. Like, I love this.
Yeah.
We'll never stop. Okay.
100%. And, I just forgot my next question now, but yes, this is what I've told
one day. At ShopRite, we're helping you make your money go further with our wide range of back-to-school savings. Save big on essentials like big crystal ballpoint pens or variants for just $18.99, 2 per pack. 4 marks, 4 pocket school backpack or variants for only $119.99 each. And an 8-piece primary school stationery set or a 10-piece high school stationery set for a low $54.99 per set. Valid until 8 February 2026. Shop more back-to-school savings only at ShopRite.
But this is what I've
told one day. We'll get them on. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, right. What I wanted to ask was, you cold call Damon?
I'll cold call Damon. Hey, I'll find an upper. Hey, here's the thing. I'm not afraid of rejection. I'll call him 1,000 times.
Yeah, till he blocks you.
Bye. Good eight. Then we're using. I got 2 phones, then I'll just use my other.
Right. What's been your favorite either acquisition or just business transaction in general since you've been doing this? Like, what's been your, would you say it's been like so far your highlight deal?
Honestly, my highlight deal that really just made me the most happy wasn't a deal. It was speaking at an event, and I spoke at Stanford a few years ago. And for some reason, see, you got to understand my family and my friends, they think I don't have a degree because I never told no one on that for psychology. I mean, I told person and she hasn't told anyone. So, and this was before I had my degree when I spoke at Stanford. But, you know, especially with, young black man, there's like this thing, like, you need to go to school, you need to get your degree, you need to do this.
Right.
Spoke at Stanford. It was like, now what? What y'all gonna say? Like, none of y'all could get into Stanford and I'm teaching them. And I had like their MERS and downloaded talk, for like a couple years straight. And I met some of the top scientists in the world. And I'm sure at the stage as well, like the smartest people in the world, like people from Oxford Analytica and different stuff. And when I spoke at Stanford, that's what made me, probably the most happy. Cause it was just like, can't nobody tell me nothing now. Like, I actually, you know, spoke and rocked to the stage and was with like the top scientists. So I would say that probably made me the most happy, like the deal that made me the most happy.
I'm sure the booking fee went up after that too.
Oh yeah. What was Fat Joe say today's price is yesterday's
price
is not today's price. Yeah. Well, I went up from, talking for 2,500 to 7,000. Yeah. So now we're at like 7.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Definitely went up. Definitely. That was bigger than my TED Talks. So
yeah. And you've done how many TED Talks now?
Two. I did two. Yeah.
Okay.
One in London and one out here in America. Those went well too. You know, TED doesn't pay you to speak, but the platforms like that, it made me a lot of money over the years.
Mm. And, obviously you're American, but have you, had business dealings outside of America?
A lot of times outside of America. I've spoken all of, South Africa, Mumbai, Jordan, Dubai, Philippines, Taiwan, spoken all over the world, but I haven't done actual business deals, in other countries. It's the same. Business is the same,
yeah, right?
The only thing that changes is how governments work and how governments do, different dealings, but it's the same.
All right. How was your experience in South Africa?
It was cool. This was a long time ago. Where was this at? Cape Town? Is it Cape Town?
Yeah.
I have a friend who was living there at the time that grew up here, and then he's living there at the time. He doesn't live there anymore. But,
what year was this?
This was probably 2018,
17. Okay. Pretty recent.
Nowadays, like now I have a girlfriend and if I go talk, we hang out and we go look at sites to see. But back then I would just get in and out. Like I would take a 16 hour flight. I would rest a little bit, hit the stage and then leave. Right. I was just doing it because I love to do it. I love rocking the stage. It's good content. And it paid well, but I never really hung out. You know, the only place I can really think of. The two places I really remember was, Philippines is really cool. Cause I don't know if you ever been to the Philippines, but you need to go. Cause
not yet.
Yeah. If you're black, you can't even walk down the street. You're like a celebrity. Like, they'll be like, what's up, bro? They'll put their fist up. They'll run up to you. They want pictures. Like you play basketball.
Yeah.
You're from America. They love you. Like Filipinos are the coolest people and they love you. You can't even walk down the street like a celebrity. And then, I remember Jordan because we're on the Dead Sea. And I just remember how many like people had like big guns. Like it was like you look right across the water and there's a lot of spiritual war in those areas. I remember them praying over the loudspeaker. That was actually pretty cool. Even though I was tired, it was like 5 a.m. Dubai is Dubai. Dubai is nice. You just can't get caught up in it. Just go do your work and leave. Don't get caught up in the nightlife.
Of course, yeah.
Lights over there. But I would say my favorite place is the Philippines.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'd like to travel to Asia someday as well.
Yeah, but you got to. I haven't been to Thailand. My friend's been there, but Philippines, right? You can't even walk.
Yeah, I can imagine. What would you say has been the biggest, or not biggest, some of the traits that you've seen in people, especially with your psychology background? I'm sure you're constantly reading people. What would you say has been some bad traits you've picked up in people throughout your time in business?
Well, one thing I noticed is everyone's the same. No matter what country you go to, everyone's the same. The only thing that's different is their inputs, what they watch, they see, but how they consolidate those inputs are the same. Here's the thing. The mind's job is survive. Some people learn to survive by being really messed up people. So you have to be able to catch that stuff. There's business people who do you dirty in a hot second because they're just in survival mode. If you saw the world like they saw it, you would feel the same way that you would do the same things that they do, right? So they just see the world in a bad way and they're just trying to survive. So I would just look out for, there's certain syntax, certain things people say, certain things people do. For example, if you know someone's lying or they're putting on like a fake mask, you can ask them something that they maybe don't like, or, and what you'll see for a second, they'll pause and then they'll like change their face real, like really fast. And you could see like they got mad for a second and then, but they wanted to kind of be fake in front of you. And everyone has a mask. Everyone has like this, the act they put on. That's the act that they learn to survive, like their identity, which is fine because, you know, survival is an important thing, but you just want to make sure you don't get around people who, especially people with, psychopathic traits, sociopathic traits. And here's the thing, business owners, especially really successful ones, a lot of them have sociopathic and psychopathic traits. Trump.
I was gonna bring him up.
Sociopathic traits. Now, here's the thing. We evolutionized where sociopathic traits and psychopathic traits are, they benefit the group until they don't. Like all those Navy SEALs, those Delta guys who went and got Maduro, those guys are all psychopaths. Police officers.
Yeah, for sure.
Police officers are high on psychopathic and sociopathic traits as well. So there, it's a skill. It's not like, oh, you're a sociopath or you're a psychopath. There's a skill. And just to bring the point home, I have some psychopathic tendencies. For example, you can't tell me no. Now I'm not going to do anything bad, but I'm just like, nah, we got to figure this out. So if you tell me, let's do this business deal and you email me, no, stop. Well, can we just get on the phone? I just wanted to, you know what I'm saying? I'm not taking no for an error. Persistent. CIA, those guys have sociopathic tendencies as well. But the difference is sociopaths, they feel bad, or psychopaths don't feel nothing.
No, that's very interesting. And like the whole psychology background that you have to me is very fascinating because, I mean, on a personal level, I'm interested in how the human mind works, you know, and trying to use that to your advantage in the world of business as well. And sometimes I feel like, I don't know if you feel this, but like as a person, you can know too much. I feel like I know too much sometimes to where it gets in the way of like what I'm simple things that I'm trying to do, you know?
Yeah. With great wisdom comes great grief. So, I don't know if you ever seen the CIA agent on YouTube, Andrew Bustamante. So he's a CIA agent who got big on YouTube, but he came to my men's group and gave a talk and I was able to ask him a question. And the thing is like, I can tell when someone's lying, right? And he could say, there's ways you can like tell someone's lying. So I asked him, I was like, you know, how do you deal with it when you know someone you love is lying? And he's like, you can't let it bother you. You have to figure out maybe why they're lying. Maybe they don't feel safe, or you have to get to a point where your knowledge doesn't bother you inside. And you just realize that this person is using this to survive. How can I get around it to do a deal with them or to get them to agree with me or different things? So class share isn't the best thing we should do unless we have to. It's really the last resort,
what we need to do is clandestinely figure out how can I use my knowledge to deal with this person.
100%. Is there anything? You said in the beginning of the show, you cold emailed me. Is there anything about Namibia in particular that excites you? Is there anything about, I don't know if you've been doing research around the economy of Namibia, anything like that? Like, share with us what do you know and about Namibia, and what interests you about Namibia?
I was looking for countries where people understood English, and they look like me, and it's wide open. It's wide open. There's a lot of money. And it's wide open. Now I'm not going to come do deals there, but if you found a deal and you were like, yo, I have this owner, he has this $10 million business. This coal mine, or, I don't know how to buy it, but he's interested in buying. I'll walk you through it and just help you out. So I'm going into the part of my life of helping. Now I'm getting to the point. Wally going to be massively successful. I also want to transition into helping a lot more. And we kind of got on the phone now. I talked to a lot of radio stations, like some in Nigeria. But just your energy, you're young like me. And I was just like, we could build something dope. You know, like sometimes when you do cold outreach, because strangers have everything you want. You know, remember they told us, like, stay away from strangers. Like, that's can't be doing that. Strangers have everything you want. But then when you actually start to talk to people, you start to see who you really connect with. And, but you can't find that out until you put yourself out there.
Right. So do you do like any kind of mentorship right now with, like, you know, college age kids, maybe even younger than that?
No, everything's for free. I don't do anything like that people pay for or anything.
I just meant like in general, do kids reach out to you, like young adults, ask for advice, stuff like that?
All the time. There's one kid, I call him my son. He's a 23-year-old white kid. Like, totally, mom and dad both white, but his dad passed away when he was younger. And I call him my son. I taught him how to work out. I taught him, you know, what to do with his money. He went to the Air Force, came back, and I basically raised him for all the man stuff, because he didn't have a man in his life to kind of teach him. So he's always hitting me up about girls, and my DMs go crazy all the time. Like, how do I do that? How do I do this? How would I go about this? So anything that I've done, people poured into me. One of my mentors, his name is Ed Rush. He taught me how to get on stages and make six figures speaking. And he taught me basically for free. And so, if he could pour into me, then I can pour into other people. And so, you know, I don't think giving back is something that is, like this great thing. I think it's something that's required. I think if you're a person and you're really chasing a goal, there's three people you need to have in your life. In your group, you need to have people that you need to make touring, people that are mentoring you, and then people on your level that are chasing it at the same time. You need those three kind of people in your life. And so I mentor people. I have mentors, and, you know, I got people that I collab with, like you know.
Any particular teachings you remember from your mentors coming up that you can share with the listeners?
Dude, the one, you know, if someone says something and it just clicks in your head, the one that in my head was math plus marketing equals money. And he said that quote, and then he gave me the numbers for one of his clients. This lady, she sold like this $100,000 a year coaching program. So if she had 10 clients, she would make $1 million a year, right? So the way she got her clients was she wrote a book. She used the book to get on stages, and then she would sell from the stage.
Uh-huh.
So what she found was, for every 50 emails that she did outreach in her market, she would get a speaking gig.
So when he coached with her, he told her, oh, math plus marketing equals money. You need to get more speaking gigs. If you could double your speaking gigs, you could double your money. And she was had like 5 clients. So she needed 5 more. So double will only be 5 more. So her focus and her lead indicator went to, doing more speaking. So that's where her focus went. So when I learned that thinking, I was like, oh, math plus marketing equals money. What is the lead indicator? What part in this, do I need to scale up? And for me, that's leads, right? That's emails. That's cold calling. And so, that's when I decided to scale my emailing up. And I can send as many emails as I want in a day. But the only reason why I don't send more than 1,000 is because you can only handle so many leads. But then as I scale up, then I'll maybe get, my assistant Tiffany to take some leads or do this, or I'll get a project manager. So you just scale up from there, volume, and being able to handle that volume.
Right. Yeah. There's I can't remember who said this, but it might have been on Shark Tank actually. Like when they say a lot of people want to be successful, but a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs aren't ready for like actual success to come to their doorstep. Like they don't have the capacity to deal with success.
Success. Yeah. It's like going viral. Like a lot of people, if they went viral today, they don't have a system in place to make money out of that virality. Like, do you have a way to capture the leads? Do you have a way to get the emails? Do you have a follow-up sequence? Like this, they think people just go viral and then they make money. Like, no, you gotta be ready to go viral. And I think that's worse than going viral. Is the only thing worse than going viral is going viral and not being ready for it. Cause then now you got all that water, but it's going to flood you and drown you rather than harness it with the dam, you know, and have everything you need.
Exactly. Roy, it's been a great first episode. As we close up, is there any parting words you want to leave with the listeners during our first episode?
Yeah. Math plus marketing equals money. If you could take anything from what we talked about is listen to this show. So you're going to learn how to scale your efforts with less energy. We're going to teach how to do volume. As people call in and they start to ask questions, I'll be able to break down your business and tell you exactly how to get more leads, exactly how to make more money. If you're somewhere where you can't scale and you're really, really small, we'll tell you how to get your first few deals. I can't wait till I share the 6-figure text message, which is a text message that could take you to 6 figures. That's in my book, the 6-figure trainer. If you're a trainer, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Anyone can do it. I'm going to share the psychology. I'm going to share exactly what to say. We're going to give you exact scripts, right? So the only thing after listening to this show is the only thing you'll have is excuses. We're going to take away every single one. You have excuses. The only thing that's going to come down is if did you do it or didn't you do it? And so I'm super excited to share. And I'll just say it right now. One of my goals is to have a lot of people that look like me in my circle that are rich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We love to hear that.
If we could go to war.
100%.
Rich.
Exactly.
Me?
Nah, Roy. Thank you very much for your time, Roy. This has been our very first edition of Business with Roy. Roy will be joining us every Thursday from 6 to 7 on Eagle FM. And I'm personally excited for this journey that we're gonna take on with Roy. And we'll see you guys again, same time, same place, next Thursday on Business with Roy. Thank you very much for your time tonight, Roy.
Hey, Tunde. Way to go, man. You're a G.